First, a man may in some ways be superior to his fellows and still serve them, if together they serve a common cause which is greater than any one man. I believe that I serve such a cause, or I would not be doing it. I take it that you feel the same way concerning what you do, or you would not put up with this life of miserable asceticism, though I note that you are not so gaunt as your followers. You were offered godhood some years ago in Maharatha, as I recall, and you mocked Brahma, raided the palace of Karma, and filled all the prey machines of the city with slugs. The Buddha chuckled. Yama joined him briefly and continued, "There are no accelerationists remaining in the world other than yourself. It is a dead issue, which should never have become an issue in the first place. I do have a certain respect for the manner in which you have acquitted yourself over the years. It has even occurred to me that if you could be made to realize the hopelessness of your present position, you might still be persuaded to join the hosts of heaven. While I did come here to kill you, if you can be convinced of this now and give me your word upon it, promising to end your foolish fight, I will take it upon myself to vouch for you. I will take you back to the celestial city with me, where you may now accept that which you once refused. They will hearken to me because they need me."
"No," said Sam, "for I am not convinced of the futility of my position, and I fully intend to continue the show." The chanting came down from the camp in the purple grove. One of the moons disappeared beyond the treetops.
"Why are your followers not beating the bushes, seeking to save you?"
"They would come if I called. But I will not call. I do not need to."
"Why did they cause me to dream that foolish dream?"
The Buddha shrugged.
"Why did they not arise and slay me as I slept?"
"It is not their way."
"You might have, though, eh? If you could get away with it? If none would know the Buddha did it?"
"Perhaps," said the other. "As you know, the personal strengths and weaknesses of a leader are no true indication of the merits of his cause." Yama drew upon his pipe. The smoke wreathed his head and eddied away to join the fogs, which were now becoming more heavy upon the land.
"I know we are alone here, and you are unarmed," said Yama.
"We are alone here. My traveling gear is hidden farther along my route."
"Your traveling gear?"
"I have finished here. You guessed correctly. I have begun what I set out to begin. After we have finished our conversation, I will depart."
Yama chuckled. The optimism of a revolutionary always gives rise to a sense of wonder. "How do you propose to depart? On a magic carpet?"
"I shall go as other men go."
"That is rather condescending of you." "Will the powers of the world rise up to defend you? I see no great tree to shelter you with its branches. There is no clever grass to seize at my feet. Tell me how you will achieve your departure."
"I'd rather surprise you."
"What say we fight?" "I do not like to slaughter an unarmed man. If you actually do have supplies cached somewhere nearby, go fetch your blade. It is better than no chance at all. I've even heard it said that Lord Siddhartha was, in his day, a formidable swordsman."
"Thank you, no. Another time, perhaps. But not this time."
Yama drew once more upon his pipe, stretched and yawned. "I can think of no more questions, then, which I wish to ask you. It is futile to argue with you. I have nothing more to say. Is there anything else that you would care to add to the conversation?"
"Yes," said Sam.
"What's she like, that bitch Kali? There are so many different reports that I'm beginning to believe she is all things to all men." Yama hurled the pipe, which struck him upon the shoulder and sent a shower of sparks down his arm. His scimitar was a bright flash about his head as he leapt forward. When he struck the sandy stretch before the rock, his motion was arrested.
He almost fell, twisted himself perpendicularly, and remained standing. He struggled but could not move. "Some quicksand," said Sam, "is quicker than other quicksand. Fortunately, you are settling into that of the slower sort, so you have considerable time yet remaining at your disposal. I would like to prolong the conversation if I thought I had a chance of persuading you to join with me, but I know that I do not, no more than you could persuade me to go to heaven."
"I will get free," said Yama softly, not struggling. "I will get free somehow, and I will come after you again."
"Yes," said Sam. "I feel this to be true. In fact, in a short while I will instruct you how to go about it. For the moment, however, you are something every preacher longs for, a captive audience representing the opposition. So I have a brief sermon for you, Lord Yama." Yama hefted his blade, decided against throwing it, thrust it again into his sash.
"Preach on," he said,
and he succeeded in catching the other's eyes. Sam swayed where he sat, but he spoke again. "It is amazing," he said, "how that mutant brain of yours generated a mind capable of transferring its powers to any new brain you choose to occupy. It has been years since I last exercised my one ability, as I am at this moment, but it too behaves in a similar manner. No matter what body I inhabit, it appears that my power follows me into it also. I understand it is still that way with most of us. Sitala, I hear, can control temperatures for a great distance about her. When she assumes a new body, the power accompanies her into her new nervous system, though it comes only weakly at first. Agni, I know, can set fire to